You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Diego Singh. Diego, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much, Brainerd, for inviting me over.
Diego, of course, we're talking about your show at Luring Augustine, Flaming Mira, which is a two-person show with Tom L. Sayat. And it's a beautiful, beautiful show of both of your work. I want to talk to you about your work in this show. And so to begin with, yeah, I'd love to talk about that title, Flaming Mira, because I know it has to do with the dialogue between both you and Tom in the show, and really your relationship as well, I would imagine, as well as, I mean, according to the press release anyway, that very strange occurrence where, chairs and bike saddles burst into flames in the streets of London because of the glass in the building that was kind of functioning as a kind of concentration of light to sort of ignite things. Let's talk about the title, Flaming Mira. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how it relates to your work?
Yes. So the title came upon because we went to see the gallery space in Tribeca, and it's divided by columns in the center. So when thinking about how to install the show and to how to conceive it, actually, Tom said, well, why don't we mirror each other? And the word mirror showed up. He actually mirrors a lot of his own marks in his paintings. And I had started a diptych of sorts. So there was a mirroring aspect there on two of the paintings that are in the show. And curiously, we have nicknames for each other, and we call each other Mavis for many, many years. Just randomly, we came up with that name. So there was that aspect. And then we needed to finalize the title, and we just didn't want to leave it in the mirror. So I thought about flaming, which was something that was a word that I was thinking about when I was making these paintings, because they're very kind of yellow and vibrant. And I was thinking about queerness in a way, and how the flaming is always kind of related to a certain political aspect of vibrancy and visibility and invisibility in queer discourse, right? So we decided to call it Flaming Mirror. And then we started thinking after the fact what it meant. We had no idea. But luckily, the curator that wrote the press release, Stephanie Seidel, who's a curator at the Institute of Contemporary Art in Miami, she kind of brought us into a place of making sense of what we were doing, because it was very intuitive. That's the way that I approach my work and Tom's. So the decision on this title was based on biography, on the space that we were showing, but it was kind of like a subconscious idea. We were knowing and not knowing what we were doing when we were naming it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, that does make sense, and I like there's so many associations as well as with queerness, as you were saying, Flaming Mira. I really like that, and so to jump right into the works, there's one called Sin Nombre, and this is, like all of them, really large work, 96 by 72, which is 6 by 8 feet, right? So
yeah.
So these are kind of larger than human scale, just about, and this one in particular looks almost like natural phenomena, like we're looking at weather or storm or, something that's really kind of overwhelming, or that's how it struck me. Can you tell me a little bit about that painting, Sin Nombre?
Yes. The old paintings in the show I decided to call Sin Nombre, which is without a name in Spanish. And it's not untitled, but it's without a name. I was thinking about something that I'm interested in my work in general is the idea of tension, tension between representation and things that cannot be represented, between what can be said and what cannot be named, between what is art and not art. That link between those poles, that tension, is what always interested me as kind of like the material for my work, like a force between these parameters. And in these paintings, I mean, a lot of people read them as, they can read them as what you're saying, you know, like some event, atmospheric event, or weather even. Some people read them as abstract paintings. They actually have a figure, all of them. They have a figure sitting, but it's kind of hard to see. It's kind of embedded. It's wearing high heels. And it's kind of difficult to see this figure. It becomes, although they're very vibrant, they're opaque at the same time. So to me, that was an interesting point, you know, to make these paintings, is to make them coexisting in between visibility, invisibility, what can be named, what cannot, what has meaning, what doesn't, kind of holding space, making space for something that operates or resists, you know, outside of language and how we tend to name and compartmentalize everything, even what we see as, you know, as this, on a surface level. You know, so that's where they came from.
That's so interesting, you know. And now that you mentioned the figures, of course, I'm trying to find the figure in there, and which is something else altogether. But let's talk about that, because you know that there's a figure in here that's hard to find, and we're talking about invisibility, and you know, we're also talking about queerness and culture around that. I mean, if I'm not going out too far on a limb here, does that all relate to that, this idea of queerness, of visibility, and the hidden figure in these works, hidden in something like a storm? You know, it seems that there's a personal narrative there.
Yes. No, you're right. There is, you know, this tension in the work that, you know, in a way, it's informed by, I mean, for sure, by my life, my experience, you know, experiences that I had personally of visibility, invisibility, a difficulty for finding a place kind of within the narratives of society, being aware of the political aspect of queerness. So there is a figure that, or something that manifests itself, and is kind of embedded in the network of, in the paintings of Marx, associations, but it's something that kind of comes in and out of focus. And again, it's that tension, which I find vital to me in keeping me interested in, you know, approaching the idea of making art and experiencing art is something that what we see naming. Again, that's why I call them the number without name, because I was experiencing myself that tension between reconciling, I guess, my personal experience, my life, and then what the role of painting would be. In this case, you know, as being these containers or these spaces where all these opposites or triangulations or multiplicities can coexist. I don't know if that's if I'm being clear.
That's so, no, that's clear, and that's so interesting. Because you know we could be talking just about visual aspects of this painting, but we're talking about a narrative now. We're talking about personal experiences, which is which is powerful and such a part of it, because sometimes, you know, now as I see the images, the figure comes forward a little more or recedes, and that's such an interesting story, and it allows the viewer perhaps to you know, come into it. But again, we're talking about the idea of visibility versus invisibility, and we're talking about it in both abstract terms and personal terms. To talk about it in personal terms, you talked about experiences of invisibility. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because this seems to play so much of a role, and then we'll talk more about the sort of painterly aspects of visibility and invisibility, but just the personal narrative, there's also a story here of you feeling unseen, right, or not visible.
I think it's something that I've experienced, but also many times in my life, growing up in the north of Argentina in a very small town, it was kind of like a very traditional, a conservative, oppressive upbringing and society where I grew up, and there wasn't much room for me. So I've experienced not being able to actually identify myself within the parameters that were available to me growing up there. So even myself, I was coming in and out of focus. You know, it was a hard, you know, processing tension to kind of understand what was my place in the world. What was I knew at some point that I was a person that was operating outside of the parameters in that society that were very, you know, dictated by the church and the Catholic Church and very, you know, conservative. So I knew that this was something that I was somewhere, that I was someone, but at the same time I wasn't being seen or heard. And it's something that I also experienced as an immigrant, right? There's always kind of an aspect of silence or being silenced, and then that comes from within and from outside. But in this tension is where I find a lot of material that I, you know, that is true to my experience. So in that sense, I don't even know if these paintings are abstract or representational, because they kind of represent, first of all, to myself, my life, but then they also come from experience. So I don't know if they're abstract in the sense that they're so removed from a narrative in a way, right? History.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So let's talk about how these are built, because that also gets at that, right? Since there are a number of layers here, it sounds like it starts with something entirely figurative, entirely you know, narrative in a sense, and then that becomes more and more obscured, and or perhaps obscured isn't the right word, because a different kind of light is then presented. So you know, they're both figurative and abstract, though they may be read initially as abstract. So how are these built? Can we talk about that? Are they coming from specific ideas, each one? There's a figure that's doing X, or is this person, you know, et cetera?
In the sense of, like, I don't know, like the ideas that come at the beginning, I like the tension between all overness, like all over abstraction and figure, bridging them together, kind of in a push and pull, showing what appears and disappears from history as well. And a painting that can be abstract and figurative, or a figure that resists being seen, that recedes, bounces back, it's opaque and non-opaque, something that is everywhere and nowhere to be seen. So I kind of come from there, and materially I build them. First of all, I approach the canvas as kind of like a blank page, and there's always kind of this trepidation, like, oh, what am I going to do with the white, etc. So if I was a writer and I had like ink right next to me, accidentally I would like spill it on the paper and then I would start. Well, I do that with the paintings. I pour acrylic paint actually on the base, and it's very random. And from that initial kind of out of control, disorderly marking, I start, once that's dry, I start building with oil paint, different marks that go in one direction or another direction. Some are fast, some are slow. As if I was like in a performance, like doing ad lib, improvising my moves. And sometimes the figure appears and then they recede. And it's kind of a back and forth. And that's how the paintings are built. I never know where I'm kind of going. I know that I come from this place of tension, the notion of ad lib, trying to find a structure within the canvas, but at the same time not knowing where I'm going. So in that sense, because I'm interested in what resists, like the mark of style or being named or being too caged. I like what is elusive about the process of art and life in general, making room for subconscious and what we know, what we don't know. That's important to me.
I love that. Yeah, that's important to me too. And these works, have a kind of light to them, right? I mean, if not yeah. a storm, putting aside that word of a kind of storm or natural phenomena, there's a sense of light, right? These paintings don't get dark, or rarely, these are paintings that seem like it could be a spiritual phenomena, an interior phenomena. You know what I mean? There's a lot of abstract work out there, and it differs, greatly, as well as this differs from Tom's work. But just to speak to a moment, if you can, of that sense of light in these, because these all also feel to me like a moment, like it could be a microscopic moment where something is being birthed, something is happening. It feels in no way, to me, dark. It feels quite the opposite, both literally and figuratively, that something exciting is happening here, that something wondrous is happening here. Does that make sense or align with some of the thinking?
No, that makes sense. Actually, interesting, like some in all these paintings, I started from the first stain that I told you about, the acrylic stain. It was usually black or gray, very dark gray. And then I kind of started building with oil paint over that, many, many layers, where I bring the light onwards. It, from a material aspect, it allows me to create a sense of depth. From a visual aspect, I mean. But at the same time, I like this idea of radiancy, things that are radiant, something that irradiates, is always pushing against a certain border or door or entry, right? Like light coming through a door or through a window. There's always a pushing towards in irradiation or something that becomes radiant. And I thought it was an interesting, I thought it was truthful to my life experience of, how I kind of had to push through certain limits or, regulations, and the institutions such as language, etc., in society, to kind of find my own way. And I feel that's something that happens with these paintings. They're very layered, you mentioned that. And I also, you know, sometimes I lose count that maybe some paintings have, like, I don't know, 18 layers of paint or something like that. They're built over 2 years. They're very slow. Because the first layer is acrylic, but then I go with oil and I lose count. So when you see these paintings, they kind of don't have any texture, like tactile. The texture is all visual. So there is an aspect of a density of layers and marks that are kind of pushed back by all these layers. You know, they're kind of hidden. There's something that comes from within the painting. And in that sense, yes, they are a personal examination in a way. You know, it's something personal. I think the personal is always political. So, again, that tension, you know, of the outside and the inside.
I like that. Yeah, it's just a gorgeous show. Both your work and Tom's work is beautiful in dialogue here. I want to ask you one last question. What are you reading at the moment?
What am I reading at the moment? I actually read many things at once. That's the way that my brain works. I was reading a book of poetry by a poet from Argentina, Alejandra Pizarnik. She was a surrealist poet in the 40s and the 50s. I'm also reading a book called De Cielo, which means kind of like melting, by a writer, Lucrecia Sappi. She's Argentine and Brazilian. And, you know, cookbooks, the news, psychoanalysis. I just jump from one place to the next. Like a lot of people, I have a hard time focusing.
Diego, it's such a pleasure talking to you about your work. Of course, for listeners, there's links here so they can see more, and hopefully they can go see the show of Diego and Tom at Luring Augustine before it closes on June 15th. Diego, I just want to thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.